Welcome to the Art of Appointment Setting podcast, where we ask today's most successful experts and entrepreneurs to share the most powerful lead generation and appointment setting tactics they use to build their business and grow their revenues. Now your host from the city that never sleeps, New York, is Kwesi Sachijinai.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much for joining the conversation today. This is Kwesi Sachijinai, and my guest today is Lana Boone. Lana is the founder of Curly Clips, which is a world's first natural hair clip extensions brand. And the reason I'm excited for this conversation is because when she started the company, she had no business experience. And within 5 years, she generated over $2 million in revenue. She shipped the product to over 55 different countries and has over 1,000 reviews on the website. She's been featured, which I think is super amazing. She's been featured in a lot of different publications, including Essence Magazine, Black Hair UK Magazine, The Huffington Post, Aleo Magazine, and countless others. So I'm really excited to dive into the journey and you know, find some of the great techniques that she's been using to consistently grow her business. But before we start the conversation, I want to take a moment to acknowledge one of the partners we have for today's episode. It's called AGM. So AGM is a B2B agency that helps you grow your business using LinkedIn. They have LinkedIn training, LinkedIn lead generation, LinkedIn recruiting, LinkedIn advertising services. They've been featured on the BBC, Entrepreneur, Huffington Post, and many others as well. And right now, AGM is offering all our listeners a free LinkedIn audit. So you just have to go to abrahamglobal.com. That's abrahamglobal.com to reserve your session. All right. So Lana, thanks so much for joining the conversation. I'm excited.
Hi, Kwesi. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So, you know, you and I connected at one Startup 500 event right here in New York. And one of the things, I know you had a different reason for coming because you're supporting a friend, like we talked about before the podcast. But one of the things that stood out to me, you're still networking, you're still connecting with people. And although you run a purely online business, you still find a time to, you know, engage with people and even more improve your skills. And I want us to delve into that a little bit more. But before we do that, how often do you go out to network with people in person, and how important is that for your business?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to be honest. I really don't go out that much. I am a self-proclaimed introvert. So while I do enjoy the presence of a lot of people, sometimes it can be a little draining.
You don't seem like that though. Yeah.
Oh, I know I don't, but I tell you, I need my alone time. I really, really do. It's crucial. And, but what I think one skill I definitely have that's helped me is I'm a really good listener. So when I do go out, I really try to listen to people and just see maybe what kind of issues they're having, what kind of problems they're solving, because, you know, through that connection, not only can you spark an idea for someone else, but you can be amazed at the ideas that you can receive from a conversation that seems completely unrelated to your business or why you're there. So while I do think networking events can be just a breath of fresh air, that's really what I use them for. For me, they're more of a place to get inspiration. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of business out of my apartment. So it's a way to get out of my apartment and into the world. And it's just an experience to breathe. And whenever I go out, I say, listen, try to come back with at least one thing you can put in use for your business today. And if you can come back with one thing, then whatever you did, wherever you went, whoever you talked to, it was successful. And so that's the rule I go by. You know, I try to come back with one actionable item that can move my business from point A to point B. And so sometimes to get that, you just have to talk to a lot of people. But I will admit, I only go to probably a few events a year.
I love it. So there's actually a lot of great value in what you said. So trying to come back with one thing. So for the 500 startup event, what was one actionable thing that you took out of that?
Yeah. So one of the things that I loved about that event were the breakout sessions. And one of the speakers at the breakout sessions talked about your like one most valuable metric. So what is your most valuable metric? Identify that metric and maximize
sales,
that
revenue. Metric.
Right. Well, my most valuable metric is retention.
Retention.
That's basically a fancy word for customer loyalty. Customers who come back. Because one thing that you'll learn in sales is that it's far less expensive to keep a customer than it is to acquire a customer. Acquiring customers is very, very expensive. But once you acquire that customer, if you can make them so happy that they want to stay with you and continue purchasing from you, you know, years and years out, I mean, that is what really, truly successful businesses are made of.
This is so good. I want us to come back to the metric of retention in a couple of minutes, but let's rewind. So, you know, I remember the conversation we had. You started with sort of an aha moment for yourself, knowing that you needed the product, and you moved to the idea stage through product and, you know, obviously to generating a lot of sales with that. I want you to, you know, kind of share some of the processes you use, because you had no business background. So what were some of the important lessons or processes that you used to actually, you know, sort of guide you through that phase?
Yeah, you know, one thing that I can say that I did was that I really needed this product. And at the time, it was not on the market. I went to a hairstylist. She completely destroyed my hair. My hair had grown down my back and we had to cut it back up to my ears. And I really didn't like the way my hair looked that short. And I have curly and Afro textured hair. And I needed to find clip-in extensions that matched my hair. But in 2013, they were only selling clip-in extensions for silky straight hair. And my hair is not silky and straight. So I thought, oh my God, this is a huge, huge opportunity to solve my own problem. And it wasn't until I went onto Google and tried to buy that product that I realized that the product was not available. And it came at a time where I was just at my personal rock bottom. And I had this really great feeling about it. And I knew that this was it, that this could go someplace. But again,
when you say personal rock bottom, how do you mean?
Well, nothing in my life had really turned out the way I was expecting it to turn out. I graduated the year of the Great Recession. Mm-hmm. So the recession happened in fall of 2008. I graduated spring of 2009. I knew I wasn't going to find a job. And it was really hard. Those years after the recession were just extremely hard. And I had done everything that society tells you to do to be successful. So I had gone to college. I had done all the internships. When the recession happened, I applied for a master's program just to try to ride it out, to be honest, ride out the recession. And when I got back, it was really, really hard for me to find employment. And I did find employment, but then I hit a glass ceiling. I was working at a journalism organization, Network News. They told me that I was too international to be the foreign affairs correspondence researcher. Okay, which is weird.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. What I can tell you is that I've done my DNA test. My ancestors have been in this country for over 300 years.
Right.
Probably longer than the people who were telling me that, or their ancestors. But, you know, they trusted me enough for me to be a White House producer and to travel in the motorcade with President Obama. So I knew that this had nothing to do with my ability. As a worker or as a producer of content or my skills, I knew that this had to do with something else outside of me. And so when my contract was up and I didn't have anything else to go to, and then I had a background in journalism and also international public policy. And so I, you know, was getting funneled into a public policy job, and then that fell through. And it's like everything, all these internships, the education, you know, I knew Arabic. My Arabic was really great at the time because I had studied abroad in Egypt. I just felt like I had done everything right. I had taken courses in economics, development, and still it wasn't enough. And it was one of those things where I was trying to grow out my natural hair, which is something that I had always struggled with. And so when my hairstylist botched it, I felt like a complete failure at everything. A failure in my career of journalism, in my backup career of international public policy. I felt like a failure with my hair. And it was just one of those moments where I was just crying on the bathroom floor, just saying, I give up. Like, I give up on everything. I give up on all my dreams. I give up on all my hopes. I just give up. And I was literally like, God, whatever you want me to do, I'll do it, even if it's scrubbing toilets. I have a big public bathroom phobia, so that meant a lot to me. But I said, even if it's scrubbing toilets, I'll do it. I'll do it. And I just swear that in that moment, I just heard this voice that said clip-in extensions for natural hair. I Googled it and boom, there was no product. So how I got to the next phase was I had this idea. And one thing I will say is that my dad is also an entrepreneur. He's had an insurance business for quite some time. Mm-hmm. He actually integrated the big insurance industries back in, I guess it would have been like the 70s and 80s. He was their first black hire for two insurance companies. And he
so
has
you had
always
an advantage in entrepreneurship from your dad.
I did, because my father is an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And one thing that he did say, he said, listen, if you want to stay in this house rent-free, I'm going to need to see a business plan. And that was one of the best things he could have told me. Now, I know a lot of people that goes against conventional wisdom today where they say you don't need a business plan. And while that might be true, you know, what I did wasn't like a 500-page analysis. I just Googled a simple business plan template. I found a template that managed or that kind of revolved around e-commerce to a certain extent. And then I plugged it in with the information that I realized I needed to know. Like, I needed to know my numbers. So I needed to know how much the cost of goods were. I needed to know how much I was going to sell it for, how much profit that would be. I needed to know current expenses and future expenses. So if I didn't want to be shipping out of my apartment forever, how much would it cost to ship out of a warehouse? What is the warehouse's base rate? You know, how much do they charge for shipping? A business plan really helped me get all of those facts and figures together and to really formulate a successful plan to launch a business having no real business experience. And so basically, what I did do, I showed my dad my business plan. He had no corrections. And I really launched. I mean, I'll give my background in journalism a credit here. I know how to research.
Right.
I can research my butt off. So, what I did. I researched and then I created the business really from that plan.
There's this kind of popular saying that you know, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. And I bring this up because I know, running a business is hard. Starting it is hard. You might have a great plan. And I speak a lot with a lot of different business owners and they have a lot of different challenges as well. So I'm curious to know, When you started executing on the plan, what were some of the biggest mistakes that you made, especially relating to sales or people or finding new business?
Can I tell you my biggest mistake actually came years after? Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you something wild and you might not believe me, but my first plan was the best plan I ever had. That plan was so golden. And it's the reason why so much of my business came in those first few years. And I think the reason why my plan was so excellent was because I was developing a product for myself. I was my consumer. Mm-hmm. So my focus was on my own hair needs, which translated to the needs of my consumer. And so it was very raw. You know, I looked at the online hair buying experience mm-hmm. of customers. And I was so close to that pain point. I mean, because I was living it. And so I literally said, how can I do this better? You know, what dream company would I create so that, you know, I would have a better experience when shopping for hair extensions online? You know, so there were certain things like I felt like hair extension companies treated the customer like second-class citizen. You know, you could spend $1,000 with the company and there would be no sort of reward or loyalty program or not even a discount off, you know, not even a thank you. And I went in saying, I want to make sure that my customers know that they are appreciated and they're valued. A lot of times with hair extension companies, there was no communication. You didn't know when your packaging, when your product was shipping. You just didn't know anything. And I was like, I want to be really upfront. And I really want to ship things out extremely fast. And this was 2013. So of course, times have changed since then, but this was still a little novel then. Last was quality. And I thought that sometimes people just shipped whatever they had available, whether the quality was good or not. And again, I said, I just want to be better than that. And so because my initial plan was so close to the pain point, I mean, it was wildly successful. Within 3 months of starting the business, we were in the black. I had made all my money back. Within 6 months, we were in a lot of magazines. And I mean, we had hit 1 million within almost a year.
This is really good. And I just want to touch on this a bit more, because I feel that for business leaders, business owners, sales leaders listening to this, I think the reason, and you mentioned that I might not believe you, but I think I believe you because you were the consumer. You knew the process, the customer experience. You knew the pain points, and you had a deep knowledge of what needs to be done differently.
And it was raw. It was like a raw pain for me. And that was really helpful.
I love it.
And to be honest, it wasn't until I started reading a lot of business books and listening, to even a lot of podcasts that I started to implement ideas. For instance, the idea of taking myself out of the business so that if someone decides to buy it, they can step in and, take complete control without necessarily having me there. And it wasn't until I started implementing some of those elements into my business in which things started declining.
Things started declining?
Yeah.
So would you say conventional business wisdom is crap or?
No, I would say it's industry specific, but also specific to your individual business.
Because you are the brand of your business. We checked out some of the social media activity that you have. You are the face of the business.
And see, when we started, that was intentional. So, when you're creating a business, you have to figure out what is going to be my differentiators. Like, well, what are the differentiators here? And in the hair extension industry, it was a really shady industry. Like you don't know who owns what, who's really behind it, whether the company is located in the US or not. You have no idea. So as a differentiator, I made the decision to kind of pull back the curtain and say, hey, my name's Lana and this is my business, because that nobody else was doing that. That was a differentiator. And then I also did it because I needed a model.
Right.
Right. And finding models is really hard. Photography is really hard. Like all of this stuff. I was also really practical because I had a budget and I was like, I can't hire makeup people, models, and real photographers right now in the beginning. Most of my budget was going towards inventory. So it was also a really practical decision to use myself as a model, because trying to do anything else would be expensive. And just finding people who photograph well is harder than you think. I mean, this was before Instagram got really huge, but it's finding models is hard. So, I used myself out of practical reasons, but I tried to take myself out of the business. I tried to use other models. I tried to put other people's faces in front. And what I realized is that the customer wasn't connecting to those other people. The customer was connecting to me and my story and what I stand for. And so after a year and a half, almost 2 years of trying it the other way, of taking myself out, I made the conscious decision to put myself back in. And that's when sales started to increase again.
Fascinating. Really fascinating. I know one of the things that you also mentioned in our conversation earlier was one of the key strategies you used was reaching out to influencers and, trying to let them use your products, like famous bloggers and so on. Can you share a bit of the process that you used to find, connect, and eventually ask them for help?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I will start by saying I personally believe in a lot of industries, influencer marketing is dead. Now, not necessarily in all industries, because it's still very profitable in some. But it's just been used and misused. And I really don't think in a lot of industries, consumers even trust influencers anymore. But in 2013, before influencers were even called influencers, when they were just bloggers happy to get free product to show their, you know, fan base, it was just a completely different scene, a different time. So what I did was, again, I was close to the pain point and I was close to this niche. I was in the community, and the community was called the natural hair community. And that's basically a community of Black women that decided to wear their hair in its natural state. So meaning they're not using chemicals to straighten their hair. They're going to try to learn to love their hair in its Afro textured and curly states, which was, you know, a really big hurdle for a lot of women, because in our society, we're often told that that hair texture is ugly and unattractive and unprofessional. So it was really a cultural movement to say, no, there's actually nothing wrong with the hair that grows out of our heads, and let's normalize it. So it's called the natural hair community, and I considered myself to be part of that.
So when you say you're part of it, was it like a Facebook group or an online community?
No, it was. Well, see, this is before online communities too were like so consolidated within like the big five, right? So this was a time when YouTube mm-hmm. was still fresh, when people still read blogs. Right. Instagram really wasn't what it is today. People were congregating in these smaller YouTube communities and blogging communities. And you didn't have to have a blog. A lot of it was also on Tumblr. You might not be producing mm-hmm. content yourself, but you're still consuming content from other people who were part of this community. Or you were still watching a YouTube video or reading.
Right. So you cold emailed or you so called it wasn't, the person in charge of a community?
Yeah, so basically I knew who I followed. The people that I look to within this community. And I just sent them cold emails. And I was rejected by everybody except for one person.
How many rejected you? Do you remember?
And I don't remember. It was 5 years ago, but mm-hmm. it was upwards of 10. I don't think I even reached out to that many people. Because again, times are really different then. Like it wasn't as saturated as it is now in 2013. So the one person who, to be honest, I didn't even know how many followers she had, because she wasn't on YouTube. She had a blog. And she also had Instagram, but I personally wasn't on Instagram. And so I just reached out to her because I liked her. I liked her blog. I thought it resonated with me. And I felt like the other people who read the blog were probably similar to me. And so I sent her a product, and what was helpful and what might be great advice to anyone listening is that she needed my product. So what happened was in 2013, there was a particular fad where women were shaving off the sides of their head or their hair. So like it was kind of like a faux hawk thing where, you know, they were just shaving the sides of their hair. And she did that, and she absolutely hated it. Like she liked it for a day, and then she was like, what did I do? And so for her, my clip-ins solved an immediate problem, because she still had hair in the center of her head. So she had something to clip the clip-ons onto, and they concealed the fact that she had her sides shaved. And so she desperately needed my product. She said, absolutely, I'll try it. And I said, thanks. I was like, and all I ask of you is that if you love it, please share it with please share it on your blog in a blog post. And if you don't like it, this is a new product. Just tell me why. And what I will promise you is that I'll go back.
And this is really good because, I mean, there are three things I'm actually getting from this. One, you're part of a community. You were engaging already with the community. And I'm sort of reiterating this for, you know, the listeners out there. Second thing you did was you were brave enough to reach out, you know, and kind of face rejection as well. But most importantly, when you were reaching out, you were leading with value. So you're sharing the products that actually solved a really important problem for the leader of that community.
Absolutely. You nailed it. And she got the product in, and she absolutely loved it. I mean, she was raving about it because it solved her problem. That's the key to business. You really have to figure out what the real problem is. Like what people really need. And I mean, hair is one of those things that sometimes people don't think about as a real issue. But for a lot of people, it is. You know, hair is just as important as, you know, the clothes you wear. Sometimes that's important to people. Sometimes it's not. But it's just the way that you present yourself in the world. And, you know, hair for a lot of people, hair is really a part of that presentation and a part of feeling confident and feeling beautiful.
I would love for us to continue the conversation. We're running out of time, but I promise to get back to kind of ask you again about the process you have for retaining your clients, because I totally agree with you. It's one of the biggest issues that a lot of businesses face. So what are some of the, you know, this techniques or strategies you use to consistently engage with the clients you have and also keep them?
You treat them like gold. You treat them like gold.
How'd you do that? That's all.
It's really easy. It's really simple. Well, I go by how I like to be treated. So, you know, I try to make every single customer feel like an actual person instead of a number. And that means that to compete with Amazon and all of these other marketplaces, I said, what is my new differentiator? What can I do that an Amazon seller cannot do? And that's hyper personalization. And that takes time. But I've realized that when I do take that time to hyper personalize and to appreciate people and to thank people, they'll always come back.
How do you do that? Because really, I mean, you have a lot of people buying from you, maybe 200, 500, 1,000, 2,000. So how do you personalize a thank you note or, you know, that personal level of engagement?
Yeah, you know, honestly, it's just about, you just about carving out that time. I mean, there's really no, there's no other way to put it. For me personally, as an online business, I made the choice to sell at a higher price point. And I did that so that I would not have to sell at a crazy volume to be able to support myself. And so, you know, for instance, I could have sold at 50% less cost. I might have had 50% more customers, but then what's the point? Because I'm making the same amount of money had I just sold at a higher cost and not have as much. Do you see what I'm saying? Not have as many customers. So I made that choice. And now what I do is I just carve that time out. So there are apps to help you do that. But at the end of the day, it's about personal connection. And my customers, they know a lot of their friends are also potential excellent customers. And so when you take that time to personalize, a lot of times people will tell their friends. And then you get really great organic growth.
I love this. Thanks so much I know we'll probably get you back in the show at some point. Thanks so much for sharing a lot of value with us today. Where can people learn about your work, connect with you, buy some clips if they want, and maybe send your personal note?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me, or my company is called Curly Clips, and that's KURLYKLIPS. We had to spell it with K's because the Curly Clips with C's was initially taken by a paperclip company, but whatever, they went under. We're still here though. Curly Clips with K's, curlyclips.com. You can find me under that handle on all social media. I don't have personal social media because I don't need that stress in my life, but you can always, I'm the one checking everything. So you can always reach out to me there or even connect with me at lana@curlyclips.com.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Lana.
Thank you so much, Quessy.
Thank you for listening to the Art of Appointment Setting podcast with Quessy Sachi-Jinai. Find out more about how to get high-value appointments at catalyze.io. And while you're there, check out the free resources for appointment setting. And be listening for the next episode of the Art of Appointment Setting podcast.